he's right here, so. Oh, he topped it. He cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go. Yeah.
Gate iron.
Oh, shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
Oh, he's back to where he belongs, eh? You're joined by Mark and Kevin.
See, you don't even know how to do my bit, do you? brilliant, Sam, man. How are you?
Yeah, can't complain. Had my first lesson off David this week.
Back in there,
yeah.
Was it like, did he go easy on you, or did he rip you apart?
Well, yeah, you tell me. So, I first went in there and he went, it's a few irons. He went, what do you want to work on? I said, obviously, the driver, you know, my issues I've got with the long stick. Okay, we'll warm you up quite now. It's a few drivers and stuff. And he went, this is interesting. I haven't had a challenge like this for a while.
Oof.
As crazy as that sounds, it's not as bad as you think. It's a few fundamental flaws that I'm doing, which they're not easy to fix. But if I work on just those little segments, then it'll be fine.
It's like I was saying last week, though, if you've got something to work on the range and you can go and bed it in with it 100, 200 balls, even sometimes 50 balls of doing it exactly how you meant to do it, can work wonders.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And get the feelings. Once you get them feelings and you start, like, it makes me turn, as you make yourself turn through the ball and get on top of it and put your weight forward and different things like that, then it feels alien at first, but a couple of hundred balls and you're it comes on worlds of difference. Like,
when I was taking the club back, I was moving backwards and all my weight was going on my back foot. So then it was more of like a timing issue to get it bang on. So sometimes if I was getting ahead of the ball and then flicking my wrists, then that's where the low left was going. And if I weren't getting there on time and leaving the hands open, it was going miles right. So it was just a matter of luck whether it went straight or not.
And like, you just don't need that round SNA, really, do you?
When you don't know where it's going. The quickest fix would be to leave the driver out the bag, but we don't want to be doing that, do we?
You can't do that, man. It's the best club.
We'll get there.
Did you play?
No, just range, balls. Didn't play at all. No, what about you? Did you play?
Yeah, I played a couple of times, yeah. I played with David, actually. Played the one of the days, the course was closed, Formula was closed, so I played the par 3, and the greens, like, for December, they are lovely. Rolling, like, tabletops, like, perfect.
Mostly, yeah.
And, yeah. And, like, I must have held another few hundred foot worth of putts. Even Hayden, one of the lads, you know, the pro Hayden at Formula, another lad, he was like, you're dangerous with the putter today.
But, did you put that down to the putter, Matt?
It's got to be, yeah. Remember when you helped me with the aim thing to looking a bit closer?
The intermediate target, yeah.
Well, that sort of helped me realise when I am picking the line, like, I can pick the closer target, and that gives you more feel and you get something to aim at a bit closer. So I was doing that for a little bit, wasn't I? Yeah. Then I was closing my eyes and getting the feel out of it. And then I was getting the judgment quite good. And then that's just built up. So I've been using me putting mat and hitting the strokes, like anything from inside 10 foot, 15 foot. I just feel like I'm in the living room and just put the straight stroke on it, because I've learned that when I was hitting at them intermediate targets, the ball was breaking the right way, or I was picking the right lines. That sort of helped me start to read the greens a bit better now going forward for the long ones. I don't actually use that anymore, but I can see it a bit better.
Yeah, it's more of the reason I use that, it's more of a confidence thing. So I know that if I've picked this line and I use the intermediate target about a foot in front of me, I know if I land up on there and it misses, I've misread the putt in my head. This is the line where I think it's going to go.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm transferring it to, like, I hold a few months at North Wales. I hold a load of putts on the par 3, hold loads on the main course as well. And you're riding on confidence as well. If you stand over the putt and thinking this is going in, like, that's what I'm thinking. I'm not thinking about missing, ever.
Well, how are you finding it with your scoring then? So, obviously, we say, don't we, the putting's the one that brings your scoring down if your short game's on fire. So, are you noticing lower scores?
Well, we haven't really been playing gross or anything. So, I've just been taking what David's been telling me in the lessons, taking it to the range. And then I'm not really caring about my score. I'm more just kind of bed the swinging still. But when I get to the green, I'm holding a lot of putts as well.
Okay.
So if I can keep that up and I can keep the swing, get the swing going through the winter, and obviously put on a bit of muscle with you in the gym.
Yeah.
Be a force next season.
Force to reckon with. We've still got our match play as well, haven't we? We need to organise that.
We need to get that organised ASAP, actually. Look forward to that, mate.
So just had a couple of games then with David and Hayden, yeah. Was it?
That's it, really, yeah.
Much practice on the range, or?
Yeah, I went to the range one of the nights, well, after my lesson. But then more just got, I'm going to the range before I go out. I was getting there an hour and a half before.
And just hitting balls, you know, yeah.
And hitting balls and then going out. So I've probably hit a good few hundred balls this week, like.
Not just turning up on the tee, absolutely pissed from the night before. And just
one of the lads is up there as well. He's got a TrackMan. Like, David's got a SkyTrack. He had a TrackMan I was hitting. He was just, he had an hour and a half before his next lesson. So I just went in there. He wasn't giving me no advice, but I was just hitting. But it must have hit about 100 odd drivers. And just every time, just looking at all the numbers and all that. Like, it's, there's some numbers on them TrackMans, man.
Yeah. Do you understand them?
No, not really. But like, trying to get me, I understand the carry.
Give it a whack, how far's that one gone?
That's all I was caring about. He's like, your launch angle's off there. I said, don't give a fuck, it's been 300 odd yards.
Brilliant stuff. Yeah, so I've got something to work on now. That's the main thing for me.
That's all you need, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just taking it back to basics. That, I mean, the stuff I was doing was schoolboy. It was stuff that you never should be doing. But if you neglect your lessons then, and you neglect seeing your swing on video, then these things creep in, don't they? So
that's it,
definitely a wake-up call. I've got a couple of months to get
A lot of people could wait till, it's getting nice now, I need to get out there, I'm going to get a lesson, I'm going to do this. And then you play your first 3 months of the season and you're working on swing changes. This winter, it's for that.
It is. Yeah.
There's floodlights on the range, there's no excuse really.
No, well, that's it. I'm going to spend a lot of time trying to get on the course as much as I can, because I think scoring's important as well, especially when we start playing tournaments in the March, April time. So, and we've just booked Turkey, haven't we? Golf holiday.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. Bogey boys on tour.
Bogey boys on tour. Turkey, what? The Masters weekend, isn't it? So we'll be doing some live recordings all the way from Turkey, won't we?
Can't wait, man. I honestly can't wait for that.
I'm looking forward to it.
So on to the golf review, are we now?
What a finish.
I know.
What a finish, mate.
It was like, everyone just crumbled and got out of the way for Westwood to just win it.
Like you say, like you said with Tiger, didn't you, in one of the episodes?
Yeah, when they all just faltered and put it in the water,
What I found strange, obviously, the tournament in itself, it was quite close all the way, wasn't it? Patrick Reed looked like he was going to walk away with it, the way he was playing and keeping the lead and keeping that little bit in front throughout the tournament. And then, obviously, you had Tommy was up there, Westwood was up there. The top five had it in their hand, didn't they? They were the only ones that if they won the tournament, they could guarantee winning it. Fitzy went on to win it, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and it just showed how complicated it can get.
Fitzpatrick's won, hasn't he? Westwood come second, but he comes solo second. So if he did, obviously with Cantor making that double bogey on 17, like it's literally come down to Westwood winning it by 17.8 points.
Yeah, when Westwood was tied second, he was third, but then he was second on his own, he was first, so he jumped ahead of both of them.
It's bizarre, isn't it? The system.
Very bizarre. If he doesn't make that double bogey on 17, Cantor, then it's not down to Fitzpatrick. It's not down to Westwood. It's not down to Reed. It's down to somebody who's not even involved in the.
I think that's a bit unfair, though, don't you? I think it's a bit unfair relying on Laurie Cantor. I don't know where he was in the standings, but it's not very high. And if for him to have a good knock on the Sunday, come up and
get solo second,
it takes messes the whole point system up.
Yeah. So what do you think Fitzpatrick should have won if we're winning the tournament?
It is what it is, really. But I just don't know. It just seems like if someone just pops in and joins you on solo second, that the whole thing can change around, and it's the difference between winning the race to Dubai and not.
What do you prefer? Do you prefer the FedEx where you start under par, or do you prefer letting the points go?
Remember I wanted all that changing, didn't I?
Yeah.
I thought the FedEx. No, I think I like the FedEx better.
You like the FedEx better.
So and where also, like, you see, Morikawa could have won it there, and he's only left America once to go to Mexico.
That needs to change.
Europe's number one player.
That needs to change. We mentioned that last week, didn't we? That there's no way that you can't step foot in Europe once for a whole season and be the number one European Order of Merit champion.
No.
How does that work? How can you be Europe's number one and not play in Europe once?
It needs sorting out that. That's what I'm saying. So when I was, you see, Tiger should have won it a good few times with the money wise, like what Morikawa's doing now. Tiger didn't qualify because he didn't have status on the European tour, even though he won the British Open a couple of them years. Like, Tigers won three, held all four majors and still doesn't win the European Order of Merit because obviously he didn't play enough events. So it needs to go back to that system.
It does, yeah. It does. I mean, if you're, it's unfair on the lads who are grafting week in, week out. Because even Patrick Reed has been leading the Order of Merit for some time now. And fair enough, he come over for Wentworth and played in that. But he's picking and choosing which ones he wants to play in.
Then when he's getting the fatter wallet out of it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean. He's just, and all right, he's not
doing it to get his numbers up, is he? He's doing it for the Skrilla.
He's obviously not winning enough tournaments to win the FedEx, is he? So he's coming and he's playing in double, if not probably treble, the amount of tournaments in America than he is in Europe. And he still can't do it with that many tournaments. And obviously, he plays in a handful of tournaments in Europe and he nearly walks away the winner as well.
I know, that's really come for all the Middle Eastern events, the Saudi events, and he come for Wentworth. And that, I can't even remember him going to another tournament.
And it was only the fact that he bogeyed 16 and 17 that he never walked away and won it, because if he doesn't do that, then he's the winner, isn't he?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
One thing I want to mention about 17, though, I noticed something. I mean, I don't know whether it was just me noticing it or whether it's been mentioned in the press anyway, because I've not seen it. But on 17, he's claiming that there's something in the bunker next to his ball, Patrick Reed, and Fitzpatrick's waiting on the tee, par 3, the 17th.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking in my head, so he calls the rules official over, and Patrick Reed's obviously, I need a ruling on this, whether he thinks there's a pebble in the bunker or whether it was just sand. Rules official just brushes him off and just says, no, obviously that's fine, you play the ball. He hits a good chip, nearly holds it, and then takes ages on his putt, misses his par putt, and then takes ages on his putt coming back. And I'm thinking, earlier in the week, Matthew Fitzpatrick has turned around and said that he hates slow play, he can't stand it. And I'm thinking, is there a bit of mind games there, thinking he's looked back?
He's the biggest fucking cunt in the world, of course he's done that on purpose.
Do you know, this is what I'm thinking. Is it mind games? Is he thinking, right, I see you're on the tee there. I know I'm not going to get a drop out of this bunker. I know it's playable, but let me just try and get in your head. And do you know what? Fitzy went and bogeyed 17.
Yeah, well, and as well, if Reed had just started doing that, like, about on his own accord, like with something with the sand, then he's already had a few discrepancies in bunkers, hasn't he?
Yeah, cheating back.
And he's moved the sand away with his backswing.
Yeah.
But he's just not a nice guy.
Sometimes, though, and using that same example there, Laurie Canter was playing with Fitzpatrick and he doubled 17. So whether that weighting impacted him as well. And
it was that 30%.
But it was that double bogey that cost Reed the title. Because if he finishes so tied... It's
a bit of instant karma for him.
This is it. It looks like, if obviously we'll never be able to prove that he'd done that, but knowing
we'll
him the
just way... say he did. If it makes him look like more of a cunt, we'll say he did.
But yeah, so Canter makes double on 17, which meant he had to eagle 18, otherwise Westwood wins it. And he absolutely bombed his drive down 18 as well. I thought, Jesus, he's got a chance here. And just see where he put his second shot.
Yeah, over in the hospitality.
Yeah, couldn't have been further away. But yeah, so then obviously he doesn't make his eagle and three-time European champ.
Yeah, he joins Seve, Monty, Rory and Sandy Lyle to win the Vardon Trophy on more than three occasions.
Yeah, I've seen that, yeah. Well, you've seen what some of the players have said to him. Tommy have tweeted saying he's the definition of the European Tour. I first watched him win his first one when I was 8 years old. So it shows how long he's been playing at that top level for. There's a couple more. Monty come out and praised him. Thomas Bjorn's come out and praised him. Fitzpatrick's come out and praised him in his post-conference.
Yeah. Greg Norman, I've seen that. Lee Westwood put a text up of Greg Norman, messaged him as well.
Yeah.
Quality, we spoke about him, like I said last week on the podcast, that he's won in the Middle East, that, like, so he could do well this week.
He's comfortable there, isn't he? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He's comfortable on the European Tour, full stop, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he made a decision to get his PGA playing right as well, though, didn't he? Said he was going to try a bit more out in America, but I don't know, after seeing what he's done there, whether he's going to continue with that next year or whether he's going to stick to more European Tour events. Going back to Fitzy, and he joins John Rahm, McIlroy and Stenson as the two-time winners of the DP World Championships. He last won it in 2016, and that's his sixth European Tour title.
Nice, nice. Mm-hmm. Seeing as a little record, it's the Jeremiah Golf Estate, isn't it? He's had six appearances, obviously 24 rounds, so there's 21 rounds under par. He's 71 overall for all them rounds. He's had four top tens and two wins. So he's not a bad guy. He likes that place, I think.
He likes the weather, doesn't he? Yeah.
Maybe he... these stats before, and we could have had a little bit of money on him.
Looking at the top five, weren't we? Wasn't looking at anybody else.
No.
That's the problem.
Did you know that Westwood didn't even know who was going to play on Monday?
What was the reason for that?
His body was not in a good way.
He had physios on him.
He said he was doing major hard work and the physios and stretching and moving. Don't know if it's his back or what's up with him, but it's, you know what I mean? He's 40 odd now, and he's saying, like, I'm getting old, I've got to keep fitted, I've got to keep on top of my game and stuff. And geez, just won the race to Dubai, so you can't really fault what he's doing, but he's aware, do you know what I mean?
No, definitely not. I mean, the only thing he's missing really is that major, isn't it? Do you think he'll win one?
I put that out there on the socials the other day and just said, do you think? And a lot of people saying, yeah, but he didn't win
50-50 split, wasn't it?
He didn't win that, did he?
That tournament, I know.
He won one tournament this year and he's won the race to Dubai, which sounds fair enough, more consistency. You don't have to win everything, do you? But I don't know.
But that's the type of golfer he comes across as to me, like a consistent player. Like, he'll never be miles away. He'll have the odd tournament where he'll miss the cut or whatever, but he's always there or thereabouts, isn't he? Like, you would say he's missed the consistency, not just recently, over the years. I mean, how long ago was it when he won his first one was 20 years ago?
Yeah.
And now he's still competing and still winning. And like you say, you don't have to win a lot of tournaments to win an order of merit. You just have to be consistent.
That's what I mean. So obviously that more suits him than the pressure building up every week. Soon as he turns up to a major, it's like another year. Like, now the next majors that he'll play, there's going to be major pressure on him. Like, you just won the race to Dubai again. It's reignited the, like, British Open next year or something. There'll be major pressure on him.
Well, and there's no time for them to let up as well, because you've got the Ryder Cup next year.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
He's going to be one. I had a look at the top 20 players in the world, and there's only six European players in the top 20 now. You've got, and Westwood's not even one of them. I think Westwood's like 35, 36. So you've got John Rahm, Rory McIlroy, Tyrrell Hatton, Victor Hovland, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and Tommy Fleetwood. They make up the top 20. The rest is mainly Americans. So it shows you, when we got that Ryder Cup, there's a lot of chance for places for the...
Yeah, 1,000,000%.
Justin Rose was 30th or something, and then you've got...
Well, that's what I mean. But you've got Justin Rose and you've got Westwood, and you've got a captain's pick. Like, who are you picking? Are you picking the Race to Dubai champion, or are you picking Rose? Probably, is he the better golfer? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's more established, isn't he? He's probably the opposite to Westwood, really. He's not as consistent as Westwood, but he is. Or he's won majors. Do you know what I mean? He's won tournaments. But you got the postman as well.
What do you
do with him?
Got to bring him, haven't you? Just for morale.
Just to get him in there, yeah. But yeah, we'll look at some statistics now. So on the, firstly, the putter, the magic stick.
We couldn't do the final episode without the Mark Lachlan statistics, would we?
So let's have a look at the putter, then the magic stick. Matthew Fitzpatrick, he led the field in strokes gained for the putter this week.
So you're in flames.
Absolutely on fire. But one player we can't see the same about, Patrick Reed. For strokes gained, he was 48th out of the 65 players. Strokes gained putting, yeah. So his actual putts per greens in regulation and putts per rounds, he was up there in the lead, but he wasn't hitting greens, chipping very well. He wasn't missing that many putts, but he wasn't holing putts for his birdies, so he wasn't gaining any strokes on the field.
So he chipped in three times on the final day, didn't he?
Yeah, 7th or 15th and on 18, yeah, his last shot of the tournament, yeah, chipped in three times on the last day.
Like, I haven't chipped in three times this year.
In your life. So he missed 24 greens all week, but he got up and down 19 times, and as you just mentioned there, chipped in three times.
And he held a bunker shot on the Saturday as well.
Yeah. So obviously his wedge game and his scrambling is unbelievable. And he still had an amazing tournament. As always, we like to talk about the distance. Guess who led distance?
Hovland.
No, Wilco Nienaber.
No, did he? Obviously. I forgot about him. You talk about him beforehand because we love his distance, but then you don't see him anywhere, do you?
Well, he shot 7 over first round. I think he was coming dead last. And then he finished the tournament 5 under, so fair play to him. He'd crawled it back and played well the next 3 days, but he had an absolute shocker first day. Couple of double bogeys, yeah, must be. Probably the biggest tournament he's played in. But yeah, 317 yards, but again, only 46% of fairways, and he was 54th out of the 65 for fairways hit this week. So you can bomb it, like we always say, bomb it as far as you want, mate, but you need to get that more consistent. So whereas our winner, Fitzpatrick, He was just over 300 yards, which is still a fair way, but he led accuracy for the week. He was 76% for fairways hit. He put himself in position more than anybody.
Well, that's it. It shows you, doesn't it?
And then, yeah, and obviously the putter was on fire. So you put them two combinations together and you're not going to be far short of the tournament, are you?
With Fitzpatrick, you could see a little bit of nerve settling on that 18th as well, because obviously if he's led in driving accuracy on that 18th, he just duck hooked it, didn't he, into the left.
You could see how much it meant to him as well, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, how pumped he was. And do you know what I mean? That's his first win in just over 2 years. That the last time he won was back in 2018, the Omega European Masters. It's the first time he's won in over 2 years. And if you think about, he turned pro in 2014, just after he's won the US amateur title. He was 19 years old. He won his first professional title in 2015, then won again in 16, 17 and 18. But then he's had a bit of a spell where he hasn't won. So it's got some good comparisons with Tommy Fleetwood, to be fair.
Yeah.
So they've both, that was obviously Fitzpatrick's sixth European Tour win. Tommy's won five, but he's won one on the Sunshine Tour.
We'll give him that.
We'll give him that. Six apiece. They've both never won on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Tommy's 17th in the world now. Fitzy's 16th in the world now. And they both turned professional age 19. Tommy in 2010 and Fitzy in 2014. So they've had similar career paths, although Tommy's been on tour longer, obviously from when they first started to where they are now. They've got a similar career path. So it'll be interesting to see who moves on from here. One's 26, fails, one's 29, yeah. Just thought it was worth mentioning that because they're both similar in what they've done.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't really lost a bit of respect for them since the whole Bryson thing.
You have?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that more because you're Team Bryson?
Yeah, well, I always have been, always will be.
Yeah. Better not review those earlier episodes then. But like you say, he come out with, that was a stupid comment to make though, wasn't it?
What
he said to Bryson, but whether that's impacted.
I think he probably regrets that, don't he, a little bit?
Yeah, it was stupid.
Fucked his own tournament up and then obviously fucked Bryson's up and just, when Bryson sees, he was going to squash his head with his bicep. But I think Bryson just takes it on the chin, don't he, about all the slagging that he gets in there?
Yeah, it's impacted this game, though, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Since he's won the US Open, I know he's only played in a handful of tournaments, but he's not done well at all, has he?
No.
Like the Masters was a complete blowout. The tournament before that was at the Safeway, where he shot about nine under first round and then just went missing. That was when the Fitzpatrick comments came out, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was that. That was literally the day, the Friday or whatever.
Yeah, and you can see the work. He said he's working harder than ever. Obviously, we follow him on the socials. He's playing tennis and he's hanging about with the long drive champions and everything, isn't he? Doing
that, trying to get a few tips. Imagine he come out swinging it like that Kyle Berkshire next year when I
just having a good rip. He pretty much does anyway, doesn't he, really?
Yeah.
That's it. That causes a close to the European Tour for the season anyway. The DP World Championships won by Matthew Fitzpatrick by just the one stroke over Lee Westwood. Lee Westwood, because of that, finishing sole second, went on to become the three-time European Tour Order of Merit champion, Race of the Bay champion. And we're on to another season. It's not long to wait either. You've got the end of January when they're back in the HSBC Abu Dhabi Championships. That's the next one from the European Tour. It starts again pretty soon, 5 weeks' time.
And that's the one that Tommy's won that twice, isn't he? That's that one.
Yeah, that's it. Well, Tommy come out, hasn't he, and said, obviously, about his big essay about how he thought his season went, and he's saying that he didn't think that he's played well on the course as he should have, thinks he should have won in three tournaments. So Portugal, Scotland.
Portugal, couldn't he? Scotland, and then what's the other one?
He did mention one on the...
I haven't read it. I'll have to read it later.
Yeah, I can't remember which. There was a tournament in America anyway that he said he felt like he should have won it. I can't remember which one it was, though. So yeah. It was pre-COVID anyway.
Was it, yeah. He might not have had a bad season as far as, like, he was up there for the Race to Dubai. He's won a couple of million. Like, he's flying. But for his standards, he wants to win majors, doesn't he? Do you know what I mean?
I suppose if you look at the he was top 10 in the world at the beginning of the year. Now he's 17th in the world, hasn't he? So to him, he's dropped nearly, what's that, 8 places.
Yeah. So
he's obviously the wrong direction for him, what he wants to achieve in his career. He said he's looking forward to hopefully getting in the Olympics, because you've got the Olympics this year as well, where there's a golfer who enters that. And then you've got the Ryder Cup at the end of the year. So there's plenty to play for, and it all kicks off again in 5 weeks. So plenty to look forward to, yeah.
No. Well, that'll bring us on to the nicely onto the ladies.
Yeah, so you got the Women's US Open, haven't we? Delayed, obviously, recording this on a Monday, so it's still going as we speak. Yeah. Amy Olsen's got a 2-shot lead. She's currently 2 under par. Never won a professional tournament before in life.
I know, I read, and it'd be quite a sentimental one to her as well if she wins this, because her father-in-law died on Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
One of them, yeah.
I know. But the lady who was winning overnight, that Hinako Shibuno, she's 4 over through 12 holes, and she's playing with Amy Olsen.
I know, I watched her play. I was watching a bit of it before, like some of the, she bladed a couple of wedges long over the greens and been making a few very bad errors.
Well, that one on two, wasn't it? She was in the woods, left on two, and she only needed to punch a little shot through the woods, and she took a wedge or something, and she's hit the tree, which is a mile above her head.
I know, like what, like it's just, it's mental errors.
It is.
Little mental errors, and it'll end up costing you a tournament.
It is. One thing I found when I was looking through and looking at the players, and there's 24 amateurs in the field this week. Obviously, only 6 made the cup, but that's a lot of amateurs, isn't it?
That is a lot of amateurs for one tournament.
Yeah, whether that's got something to do with COVID, I never got to the bottom of it, but I'm thinking that 24 amateurs in one tournament is a lot.
Is it usually that much, like?
No.
Like do the women just, because I know they've got more majors, haven't they? So I wonder if they had more different amateur tournaments where you get entries, or more like... Remember when, like Shaq Lady was saying, that when he was playing, if the PGA events and different like things get more spaces for Wentworth, now they've only got about one. So maybe the women's game's not that far up there yet. So then more amateurs actually get spots from other places or something, wasn't it?
Other tournaments, maybe. Yeah. We'll have to fact check that one. But yeah, only 6 that made the cut in the end. Top amateur at the moment, Caitlin Papp. She's +3. But that's enough to give you the top 10. But yeah, Amy Olsen, going back to Amy Olsen, she's turned pro in 2013, and this will be the first victory she's ever had. So yeah, like you say, a sentimental one. It'd be nice for her to get over the line. But she's being chased by a couple of veterans. That in B Park, she's looking to make a late charge, 7-time champion. She's currently a +2, so she's 4 off the lead, but she's finished their round. So with 5 or 6 holes to go, you don't know what could happen there, considering how tough it is. Yeah, Imbi Park, she's won 7 major championships.
Good effort, that, isn't it?
Yeah, she's won 2 US Opens. And then you've got Ji Young Ko, who won 2 of the 5 majors in 2019. And she's just a couple back. She's at even par at the moment. So again, she's gone 14-0. She's 1 under for today. So again, that's another major champion in the past that knows how to get it done. Chasing her, so
it won't be easy for her anyway.
It won't be easy for her, no, especially on that course. I don't know what to think about that rough. What's happened?
I don't want to think about the playing on 2 different courses for the major. So they're playing on the Cypress Creek course and the Jackrabbit course. You know what I mean? For the major championship to play on 2 courses, like how do you even set your records and do all the stats and that if it's over like it's out 2 different courses? It's weird.
Very weird that, yeah.
You know what I mean? I know they do it. In the men's game as well, don't people?
We'll have a little look into that to see why. But yeah, no, so the US Women's Open coming to a close there. But there was another tournament on this weekend as well, which we'll quickly jump on, the QBE shootout. So I mentioned last week, didn't I, Louis Oosthuizen and Tony Finau, that we wasn't sure why they decided not to play in the race to Dubai, especially Louis Oosthuizen, considering he was 10th or 11th, so he had a chance of winning the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah, and he played with Bubba Watson in the QB shootout, and Tony Finau played with Cameron Champ. Both finished on 26 under par, tied 5th in the tournament, only over 3 rounds. And it was Harris English, who's obviously been playing really well this year. He partnered with Matt Kuchar, and they won by 9 shots. Do you know what they shot over the 3 rounds? 58, 61, and 60.
Fucking hell, what, like, is it Texas Scramble, like?
Yeah, it's Better Ball, isn't it?
Yeah, but Better Ball is like, you've still got to shoot and make the birdies, and that's so you've got to dovetail them out perfectly. But like, surely they haven't got any like amateurs with them with shots or anything there.
18 shot. Well, that wasn't even the lowest rounds of the week. Kevin Nair and Sean O'Hare opened with a 56, 12 birdies, 2 eagles, and 4 pars.
What the fuck?
I know.
Are they playing a pitch and putt?
It looks like, doesn't it? Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, but I thought it was worth mentioning the QB shootout. I know we never reviewed it, but obviously the tournament's finished and thought 37 under par over 3 rounds.
It's got nothing to do with the tours, though, has it? Doesn't count.
No, there's no points in that, no.
Well, just a little bit of fun or something, is it?
I don't know. There's only about 32 players that play in it.
I see.
Whether it's just a charity thing, I don't know. I don't really watch the QB shootout when it's been on in the past. But
no, they're quite hard to keep up with them team ones, aren't they? And it's all weird scoring, and then there's usually, as I was saying, amateurs. They're usually amateurs, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
They're playing them like them sort of events and that. But interesting, 3,700. Some knocks them, aren't they?
3,700 for three rounds as well. I believe a 56. I've done that myself a few front nines.
Yeah. I'm not even messing. PJ professional David Goscombe has had a 54, you know, round four and beyond.
54?
I think it was 54 or 56, yeah.
54 is 18 under, you know.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
So what's he done there?
Well, because it was on winter greens. Bucket holes, like. Oh, big
bucket holes, okay.
Yeah, but you still got to get the ball in the hole, and everything he was hitting was just going in. Like, and it was just, he was putting everything on the greens, like eagled every par five. I think one of the par fives you can reach in one, though. Like, it was short. But I'm pretty sure it was a 54. I'll have to fact check that with him.
Unbelievable, though. No. 54 shots for 18 holes round anyway is good, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But I'll have to do it. Let me get back to you on that one.
I was going to say, yeah, let us definitely check that one. 54, some going, like...
Just going back to the women's a second, like, you notice the leaderboard, lots of Asian, lots of, like, Thai, Koreans, Japanese and stuff.
Yeah.
Remember when that, Ryo Ishikawa, was it? Remember he came on the scene?
Yeah.
A couple of others, like, and they were like, oh, the Koreans and the Chinese, and they're going to overtake the game. It's funny that they haven't, in it, but they have in the women's.
It is interesting that, to be fair, yeah, because they are dominating.
They dominate the Olympics. They work the Chinese, not just bash it, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
It's amazing that they haven't actually took over the PGA Tour yet, isn't it?
Obviously, America's a rich country, isn't it? And if you look at it...
Oh, yeah, because China's skinned, is it?
No, but what I mean is it's well established in the game, like loads of golf courses, loads of professional coaches, the setup in the American colleges is all there. It's financially.
That's what I mean, but you think of these Chinese people that get the kids and when they're 18 months, making them run miles and marathons and that, like, do you know what I mean? Like,
either, yeah.
Well, haven't you seen them in the gymnasts and all that? Getting them and they're putting them in camps and like they're heavy customers, the Chinese, mate. So you think that they were like, do you think they would have had these golfers and like wanting to take over? You know what I mean? But it was just an interesting fact when I seen the leaderboard, thinking, I wonder why they haven't took over the PJ or the European, do you know what I mean?
Well, it's only really Matsuyama, isn't it? Matsuyama's probably the biggest superstar from an Asian perspective, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, or Afi Barmrath.
What a legend. So what's our birdie bogey bust this week then, Kev?
Well, the birdie's got to be Westie, hasn't
it? Yeah, it has to be, doesn't it? Three times race to Dubai champion. Well, Order of Merit champion, and it's changed its name over the years, but...
Three times.
It's got to be like
bravo.
I'd even go so far as to say the way he celebrated it. See his Instagram story.
Yeah, with Stenson, I'm getting swatted and that. Yeah, that is the bird. You actually see him like bingoed in the seat the next day.
Absolutely bingoed. Yeah, exactly what we like to see. That celebrating style.
I seen a few of them on the Instagram. I'm having a bit of a knees up, like Tom Lewis and Laurie Canton, that were all dancing around like the hotel rooms and stuff. So must have just been a good old let your hair down sort of night.
It's been a mad year, hasn't it? When you think about it, obviously with COVID and everything, no one, everything's locked down. And obviously, I imagine when they're in those bubbles, you'd think that they're not allowed to go out and leave the bubbles, are they? Do you know when the European Tour and they go and play an event, they can't just go somewhere. They've got to stay on site, haven't they?
Yeah.
And conform that bubble. So that's probably the first time they've been like, right, there's no tournaments now for 5 weeks. Let's just
do what we want.
Let's go and all get sloshed.
Yeah. Decent. Look good. I like to see that side of the people, do you know what I mean? When they're more than just golfers, obviously.
Definitely. You always see Stenton, he's always up to no good. And he see what
he's doing. Yeah, see him in it with Poulter's keys. That one,
you always need someone like that on tour, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. If anyone hasn't seen that, make sure you go and check it out on either Stenson's or Poulter's Instagram.
Yeah,
and Stenson hides Poulter's keys and he's videoing them from across the car park when he's looking around, going mad looking for them. He's
blaming his caddy and everything.
Yeah, blaming you.
Where the fuck have you put these? Unbelievable. So, what's the bogey?
Well, you can add it. Mix it, you can pick what you want with one of these two, the bogey and the bust. Either there's no more golf or there's no more bogey boys, whichever comes more important.
I think we just need to make it clear that there's no more bogey boys for now. We will be back.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Jesus Christ, we're going nowhere.
No, yeah. No more golf now. This is the season finale, which we've said. Obviously, we're going to wrap the season up. We've still got some interviews to be releasing over the next couple of weeks, so we'll still be releasing content. But for our reviews, because the golf's finished now until the beginning of January, this is the final episode for the next 3 weeks, isn't it, Kev?
Yeah, well, we've got a couple of interviews in the bank, haven't we? And then we've got a couple of interviews lined up and hopefully try and get a few more in. But we just keep bringing content and just hoping that people like it. And that's slow it. And steady wins the race.
So the bogey is no more golf for a few weeks. And then the bust is that, unfortunately, because there's no golf, there's no bogey boys either.
Yeah.
But we'll still be providing content, as we've said, through the interviews that we've got stored and that we've got lined up. Some really good insights to golf coming up, haven't we, Kev?
Yeah, man, of course we have.
So there is one thing that we do need to conclude before we end the series, and that is the GOAT GOAT debate.
The debate.
We've done that, haven't we? We've done the generational GOAT debate over the five generations. Obviously, Bobby Jones initially, then Ben Hogan joined them, Jack Nicklaus, Sir Nick Faldo and Tiger Woods. So we'll just quickly review, obviously, their backgrounds. Won't spend too much time on it. And then you've got a special guest appearance for us, haven't you, Kev?
Well, I've got a special a request off one of my friends who said, have you never heard of Mo Norman? And I was like, no, go on. And then I had to look into him and you're in for a little fact file treat here. Yeah, as you say, it's like one of them Mickelson things. You can't be called the GOAT, but some of the things that I'm going to read out to you, you'll just be like, wow. Wow. You want to wrap it up first and then I'll bring this one in?
Yeah, let's go for it. So Bobby Jones, amateur sensation. He won a total of 7 majors in the 7 years from 1923 to 1930 without ever turning professional. Over that same period, he won 5 US amateur championships and 1 amateur championship with winning scores of 10-9. 9-8. He won 8-7 3 times and 7-6. So they weren't even close.
Absolutely roasting people.
Just roasting people, yeah. You're probably thinking when you get to a final with him, yeah, lad, you just take this.
Yeah,
but that gets him into, that got him into the majors by winning those tournaments. And
winning the majors as well, though.
And then he's going on and winning the majors, yeah. But like you spoke about in your review, he was a lawyer by trade, was he?
He was a lawyer, yeah, full-time lawyer.
Full-time lawyer, so he wasn't interested in the professional side of it, was he? He was just going because it was a game he enjoyed, really. I don't know what the money was like back then, but I imagine...
Where'd you get the time to be a lawyer and be a golfer?
Not just a golfer, though, one of the best.
I know.
He's putting in the office while he's sorting someone's case file out. Yeah, and then next we have Ben Hogan. Obviously, Pip Sam Snead, winner of 9 major championships. Having won at least one of each major championship. Not many have done that. He had 64 PGA Tour wins, which is 4th of all time. And obviously one of the most amazing things was after surviving a head-on collision and being told he'd never walk again, never mind play golf. And then just 5 years after, in 1953, he won 5 of the 6 tournaments that he entered, including all 3 majors. As we spoke about in our review, he couldn't play the PGA Championship that year because it clashed with the Open. So he won 3 out of 3. Potentially could have been the first ever person to win the full Grand Slam.
Well, he didn't have a chance, did he?
So well, this is the argument, yeah. And the way he was playing, obviously he's winning everything he entered in that year. We said he had to cut his tournaments down because of his injuries. He had to pick and choose what tournaments he could play in. But he carried on for almost 20 years after that as well. Didn't retire till the early 70s. So, yeah, again, another unbelievable talent, Ben Hogan. Then we moved on to another generation, Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer. Just a small number of 18 majors in the bag for the Golden Bear. Yeah. And a total of 73 PGA Tour wins, 3rd of all time. He was the first player to win all 4 majors 3 times, although he never won them all in the same year.
Unreal, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Then it was on to another, Sir Nick Faldo. He went up against Greg Norman, mainly residing on the European Tour for his career. He won 30. European Tour events, which was 5th of all time, and he also won 6 majors, won 3 green jackets at Augusta and 3 Open Championships, and he also won 9 PGA Tour events, but as we mentioned there, it's because he mainly played on the European Tour. And outside of America, it's only Harry Vardon and Gary Player who have won more major championships, so he's the 3rd leading all-time major champion outside of America.
Unreal, isn't it?
And then the main man, the man that gets our vote, but obviously it's not up to us to decide, Tiger Woods, TW. So just the 3 majors behind Jack at 15. Tiger's also won all majors at least three times, and he's the all-time winner on the PGA Tour with 82 wins. Just some interesting facts about Tiger that we never covered last week. I said there's a few interesting ones that I bring to the table today. So from 1996 to 2007, he made almost $770 million.
Fucking damn.
He's the first athlete to earn over $1 billion in his career.
Effort.
Very good effort. And there's one thing that I didn't know about him when I'd done some further reading, is that we spoke about the infidelity scandal back in 2009 and the damage that done to his career. But I'd say probably the biggest damage it done was to the Tiger Woods design. So back in 2006, he decided that he was going to start designing golf courses, firstly in Dubai. So he went through the process of building the course, and a total of 7 holes were built before the whole thing collapsed in 2011. So 5 years of hard work to only get 7 holes built. And then a couple of years later, from his first build in 2006, he took on another 2 courses, one in Carolina and one in Mexico, and they both never materialized due to financial implications. And it was estimated that the scandal cost around $8 billion.
Jesus, man.
Yeah, that's his estimated earnings, but he was also dropped by Accenture, AT&T, Gatorade and General Motors. Gillette suspended any adverts with Tiger in them, and Tag dropped Tiger from their advertisements also. So all the money lost from those businesses from no longer supporting Tiger Woods, plus his estimated career earnings, do you think it was around $8
billion? Do you reckon anyone's ever asked him, was it worth it?
Great question.
I've got a few interesting ones on. Do you know that he's won 7 times in a row between 2006 and 2007? And he's won 6 times in a row in 1999 and 2000. And he's won 5 times in a row in 2007 and 2008.
What a man.
In a row.
How is there even an argument for it? I say it's not our decision, yeah, but how is there even an argument for him?
It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, because you think, how many years did he have out the game with us? Because he won the US Open in 2008, and that was major number 14. And then it took him 11 years, didn't it, before he won the Masters last year. Mm. So that in that 11 years, he's obviously won some tournaments, but nowhere near the caliber of tournaments that he'd won in those first 12, 13 years as a pro. So can you imagine if that wouldn't have happened? I know you say, if your auntie had balls, she'd be your uncle. But how is she going to say that again?
Took the words out of my mouth.
But I think like this, but I always just think to myself, what could have been?
Yeah,
could have been. When you ask him, is it worth it? There's no way it could have been worth it.
No,
but you never know.
You never know.
But he was also arrested in 2017. He eventually pleaded guilty to reckless driving. Do you know what he was fined for that?
What?
$250. Is he even worth it?
Even worth what? Arresting him?
Taking $250 off him. What's that to him, Mike?
No, but it's, I don't know.
Slap a bigger fine than that.
His face was all cabbaged on them pictures.
Yeah, when he got done for drug, because he was on some sort of medicated drugs, but he was drinking as well. So, and he was absolutely butty faced when he.
I thought there was no trace of alcohol, but he was just it was the meds for his back and he shouldn't have really been operating the car.
So he got done for reckless driving, and he got a fine and had to do community service, and then he got told that he had to go on a training course and he wasn't allowed to drink for that time period. So you put 2 and 2 together, you know what I mean?
Wait, what was he doing? Litter picking, with his high vis on and that?
That's what I was thinking, I was thinking to myself, I wonder what he'd done for those 50 hours,
Fucking hell, man, surely not.
And where he went?
Probably just have to do a few charity events for free.
Yeah, probably.
You know what I mean?
So come on, give it to us, Mo Norman.
So Mo Norman, have you heard of him?
I've heard of him, yeah. I've not really read into him, but I know, he's quite a character, and he was banned off tour. Yeah, so
basically, he's a bit of a character, but it all started. He was working in a bowling alley for getting 10 cents an hour, putting Skittles up, just standing them back up when people knocked them down. And he got a letter off Bobby Jones inviting him to play the Masters in 1956. So he went to the Masters that year. And then he's dead nervous with crowds and different things because they reckon he's never been actually diagnosed, but do you think he's got autism because he's got major routines? He likes to wear his pants up his leg a bit, half down his shin. He likes to wear, he only wears long sleeve tops and he buttons it all the way to the top all the time. And
yeah.
He's got quite a funny voice, do you know what I mean? He's got a bit of a routine to it. So if you had to put your money on it, you'd say he was autistic, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that routine then travelled over into his golf swing.
Very repetitive and very...
Very repetitive, yeah. Regimented. And he invented the one-plane swing, which is what, like, Bryson DeChambeau has adopted now. So, like, it's weird. Like, do you reckon that he drinks 26 cans of Coke a day? That makes him the GOAT or not, like... well, Tiger Woods said in an interview, there's only two men that have ever owned their golf swing. It's Mo Norman and Ben Hogan.
Ben Hogan, yeah, I thought you were going to say that.
So he used to just turn up, no caddy, loads of mud on his clubs, and they never cleaned his clubs, no head covers, they're all just twatting around in his bag, and he'd just rock up onto the tee, hit it, and run off to his ball. In the 1956 Masters, he got on the tee, and when the announcer was like, on the tee, Mo, and then he hit it. And he said he looked up and was like, that's on the fairway.
Probably itching for a can of Coke, wasn't he?
Yeah. And then someone asked him when the last time he missed the fairway. He said 12 years ago.
mad he remembers the numbers, though, innit?
Yeah. So then that night, he shot 71 the first round of the Masters, with the first year he went, that when he was all nervous and stuff. And he went to the range and he bumped into Sam Snead. And Sam Snead gave him some advice. And he reckons because he took the advice that literal and that to heart, that he hit 800 balls that night and fucked his thumb. It like wore a hole in his thumb because he hit that many balls. And he ended up shooting 78, but he made the cut and he pulled out. So obviously they're not going to like that, are they? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then basically in 1959, he went to the Masters again, when played four tournaments on the PGA Tour. He played 12 in his whole career, but he played 12 tournaments that year. Sorry, he came fourth in one in Phoenix. And the PGA Tour, like, and three officials and one player collared him, like, after he'd done something. He had a bit of an altercation on the course with one of the players, and they all collared him in the corner and was like, listen, you need to start having a caddy. Like, you need to start playing the game, like, properly. You need to start... Because he used to tee it off, like, big, massive tees, like, about, like, a foot high and stuff, just because he could, like, on the course and stuff.
Sounds like Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking it's definitely, it's based on him 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
Like, he sets it up a foot behind the ball when he swings and hits it. You know what I mean? So they all said, like, you can't be doing none of this anymore. You've got to sort your act out, to dress properly and all that. And he went to his mate's room like an hour later, and he was crying his eyes out, like saying, like, life's got to him and he can't do it no more. And he went off back to Canada, and that was the last time he was seen on the PGA Tour. But then he went to Canada.
So that was because they turned around and said to him, like, you need to change your act up or get off the tour. He quit the tour from there.
So yeah.
Wowza.
I know. So it's sort of like bullying, really.
It is, yeah.
He went on to win 55 times in Canada, though. And you reckon when they asked him how many hole-in-ones you've had, he actually lost count. But in tournaments, there's been 17 hole-in-ones, 9 double eagles, 3 59s. And he's got 33 course records, obviously 3 at 59 and 4 at 61. They reckon that if he has 100 butt range balls on the range, that if he hit with a long iron, like a 3-iron or a 4-iron, he hit them, and you could get a crate and put them on top of where they are. That's how accurate he is with them. And then, when he retired, the Titleist, the CEO of Titleist, put him on a $5,000 a month retainer for life, just to give him just to say, here you go. But when he was actually playing, he was always skint. I don't know what he'd done with his money, but like he was always skint. And anytime he did have money, he'd carry it all in his left pocket. So he just could be going around with big wads of cash on him and stuff. <didn't he? laughs> So another thing, there's a couple of little legends about him as well. Never mind, like all that sort of, like, they're facts. But there's a few things. He was playing a tournament in Canada, and his caddy said to him, "You can get to the green. It's a driver than a 9-iron." Yeah. So what he done was he hit 9-iron off the tee, and then hit driver onto the green.
And he got it on the green as well. That's unbelievable. Yeah.
And then he was playing an expedition with Sam Snead and a few other players. And it was 240 yards to cross this creek. And Sam Snead said to him, "Mo, this is a layup hole. You can't clear that driver." And then Norman said, "Not trying to. I'm playing for the bridge." You know the way he speaks. And he hit it onto the bridge and crossed over the water, like through the bridge. But he called it before he hit it.
Oh,
Fucking hell. Like, another thing, he had 1,540 drives in 7 hours, yeah. None of them were shorter than 225, and they were all within a 30-yard wide landing zone.
He took that, and then in one sitting, was it?
In one go, yeah, in 7 hours, yeah, on an expedition thing.
Fucking hell.
So, and then another thing as well, he was leading the tournament by one in on the Canadian tour, and he four-putted the last hole, right? And then on the next tournament, and one of the reporters said to him, any four-puts today? And this on a par three, 233 yards. And then Norman put the tee down, hit the shot while it was flying through the air, turned around at him to the reporter and went, no putting today. And the ball landed on the front of the green and rolled up and went in.
What's that even possible, lad? Is he human?
Well, honestly, he reckons that he can, in an expedition as well, that he hit a shot and he says, I'm going to land that on top of that ball, and he lands exactly on top of it. You should watch some of, like, I've been watching the pitching lesson with him from 70 yards, and he just flicks them and they're just all landing right, bump, right next to each other, exactly the same distance.
Wow.
Unreal. So he was a bit of a legend of Mo Norman there. Just thought to get it out there, a few like funny little stories, but he's the man, isn't he?
He is, yeah. I mean, I'll go back to saying I wonder what would happen again. But, you know, what would happen if he'd have carried on the PGA Tour? And wouldn't have been...
You were all saying all he needed was a bit of love and compassion and just let him be himself. And the PGA Tour just didn't want that back in that day. You know what I mean?
So like that's the one thing that lets golf down, isn't it? The political...
The stinkiness of it all, yeah.
That's...
As you said, well, if he's had three double eagles and he's had 17 all-in-ones and all 59s and stuff, he obviously play ball, can't he?
Bloody hell.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's just interesting. I put a little a poem that he done on the story today, if people want to go and check it out.
Good.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. He talks about this little robot that he tells what to do and how Golf Is Happiness I've put up, and I've got the robot one to come. So I'll release that after this is released.
So what about if you take his cans of Coke off, and what do you reckon that's doing to him?
I reckon he'd probably start biting people, to be honest.
Some sugar there, mate. Yeah, 26 cans.
Yeah.
Now that's probably where all his money went.
I know.
It's an expensive habit, that.
It's mad, isn't it? But he's just obviously that wild and that crazy of a character. Like, I can't wait for you to see the robot poem that he does, man. It's mad.
No, I will. I'll get straight onto YouTube and I'll have a little look at Mo Norman, to be fair, because that's got me really interested. I've always known about him, but I've never taken the time to really study what he's done or look into it. It's not something I've ever done, but I think it'd be really good to have a look.
There's another fella as well called Tim something, and he adopted Mo, everything about Mo, and wanted to know more and more and more. And he's called Little Mo now, this fella, because he just literally got the Mo Norman swing, and then now he teaches that swing to other people. Like 200,000 people have graduated from the Mo Norman Institute who've wanted to go just to learn how to swing like that.
Yeah.
Have you seen him? He's got his legs wide open.
And I've seen him hit it, yeah.
It's not what we're getting towards anyway.
Definitely not, no. We struggle the best of times, mate. I can't imagine us getting something like that, right?
I know, but if we don't have to turn, that might help us. We might need the Mo Norman Institute.
Maybe. Any flexibility involved in the Mo Norman Institute?
One bit, mate.
That's me.
He's
a big I think that's the next step. I know. So that's the GOAT debate.
Yeah,
for this season done. Yeah, Bobby Jones, Ben Hogan, Jack Nicklaus, Nick Faldo, Tiger Woods. Take your pick. Mo Norman. And Mo Norman as well, if you're into him. Yeah, but no, it's been a good little segment that I've enjoyed. I've enjoyed getting to know.
It has, yeah.
Obviously, there's players that you know more about, and there's players that you don't know so much about. So it's good to get a bit of insight on them.
I think looking back, every single little segment that we've done, it's come from a bit of you, a bit of me, and we've just got it out there. And we've had a lot of fun with it. Do you know what I mean? Like even remember the perfect golfer that we done.
This is the season finale. We look back at the season we've had. It's been good, hasn't it? We've had the perfect golfer. We've had our birdie bogey busts that we do every week. We've had the order of merit that we've done. We've obviously reviewed the golf on all the tours. We've had a few competitions who can get down the lowest handicap.
Yeah, in-house, me and you sort of things. That's what I'm saying. So next year, we've got the Bogey Boys order of merit, which is getting revamped and restyled, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. We've decided the first tournament is going to be the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship.
Yeah.
That's the 24th of January. So we'll make sure that something's released, if not by the end of this year, by the start of next year, for people to start entering. We'll put all the rules on the social media. Anyone who's given us the email address to contact them, we'll email all the details over. If you still want to enter, you can just send us a message, a DM, whenever you want, and we'll keep all of your details ready to send over when it's ready to go. But it's going to be a really, really interesting season for the Ordinary Men. It's going to run right up to the FedEx, so it's a full season long.
Yeah, that's what I mean, and it's going to be more based on a few different stats and different things. Your player doesn't just have to win to get points; he can actually win other events, other areas, can't he, and stuff. So it's a little bit of a twist on it, isn't it? Really.
Yeah, it is. There's more work for us to do, really, more than anything.
Yeah.
It's basically what we've done, made it harder for ourselves, but hopefully it brings more fun to everyone else and a little bit more interactive.
We need to think of a few like new segments and different things that we're going to do like over the next year. Like that Perfect Golfer could get redone, but we're based on, like, you don't start to do, like, get opinion and get other people involved now that the following's getting a bit better.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we're getting a lot of people voting now on the social media, so people are getting involved, which we really appreciate and we really like. So, yeah, just keep that coming, and we'll get the Perfect Golfer on, and people can make the decision, can't they?
Yeah.
So we've also got the Bogey Boys Pro Am as well. The golf day to look forward to, haven't we?
Oh, I can't wait for that. Yeah, we have to get that booked, man.
I know. Yeah.
No, to be fair, phone me all only letting you book a week ahead.
Yeah, we have to we'll have to make some inquiries, because Formbiola is our preferred choice, just because the function of it, and after it we can have it all in one place. Yeah. COVID permitted, but yeah, we're looking on doing that probably May, June time, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so that's a pro. I'm talking about pros. We've still got professional routes. We hope you've enjoyed them as well, because as I say, we've interviewed 10 professionals now, and the idea is just to provide a bit of insight into what it takes to become a professional, the highs and lows of the career, what type of graft they have to put in to get to certain levels. As I say, some professionals are happy to go the teaching route, some professionals are happy to play on the smaller tours and just do things in between. Some players want to strive to be the best in the world. So the way we're doing it, and the players that we're getting, it's giving you insight of players on the European tour, players on the lower tours. You know, it's just players just getting started and how they're feeling. Players like Shaq Lady, you've been around for years.
But it just shows you, he could have easily given up in his 40s or in his 30s, and he's plodded on through it because he loves the game, and then it's paid dividends in his 50s. Do you know what I mean? So it's another, it's like never give up. But you've also got the other end of it from Myersco, or people like, because we went to Myersco, so most of our players have went to Myersco, where it's like the model of the story is of the Myers of the professional route. If you go the range in college, you will become a tour player.
Pretty much, yeah. If you go to the pub, you definitely be end up doing a podcast.
You're definitely not doing anything like that.
Yeah, you end up doing a podcast like me and you.
Yeah. Well, it's been a good season. We've come a long way. I was going back and listening to a few of the like the earlier episode, that first episode. Like, I've got a good few hundred views on that now, and it sounds like we're in a bath underwater.
Well, that's it. There's still work to do. We're still learning, aren't we? As I say, the main thing is our passion for the sport. You know what I mean? We love golf. We've grew up on golf. We've never left golf, really. We've had a couple of years off, and now we're back.
I've never loved golf more in my life. I, like, literally think about it. I'm on eBay every day just looking. I'm just absolutely addicted to it.
Yeah, it is. And once you find that passion, that's like, this is easy for us to do, isn't it? Just to come on and have a chat.
It's one of them. It keeps you up to date on the golf. You know exactly what's going on. It's fun to do, and it's informative. Hopefully, with the professional side of it, and we have a laugh every week. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, but most importantly though, we want to thank everyone for the support as well. I mean, obviously, what's the point in recording if people aren't listening? So, as I say, keep listening. Keep giving us feedback. You know, if you don't like something, you do like something, let us know. We're still trying to strive to be better at this.
We've only had a quarter of a season, really, haven't we? Do you know what I mean? Three and a bit months. So we're just, tweaking everything out. Hopefully when we can actually be together and be next to each other, we get the sound even better. We can literally go forward with all new ideas and get people actually to sit there, interview with us, and we can have more of a conversational feel where you're instead of being on Zoom and stuff. So the plans are big for 2021.
Well, that's it, yeah. And we're talking about the plans for next year as well. We've got the YouTube series that we're going to start, so we're going to be playing some of the best courses in England. We've already got confirmation of a few top, top courses, which we'll release over the next couple of months. But we're going to be playing on course and the exact same things that we're doing now, just having fun with it, letting people see courses that they maybe have never seen before, ones that aren't normally on the telly. And hopefully you get a bit of insight and maybe try courses that you might never think, I would never thought to have tried that before, and we'll do some course reviews.
We've got listeners in America, haven't we? So, like, when they want it, that you're organising like a lad's holiday, and you're thinking, oh, Turkey, Portugal, Spain, America, but you might be thinking, I want to go to the northwest coast of England and play a few of them absolute roasters that we've got here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
once we review them.
Definitely, yeah. And as I say, that's all to come next year on the YouTube, and we're going to start recording, as Kev said, there in the studio. Get the audio set up. Get more of a personal feel to the podcast and start getting them on the audio and get them videoed and get it all set up and ready for next season.
That's it, man, yeah. But it's been a whirlwind. It's been brilliant, to be honest. And what I would like to thank is you as well for inviting me to come on and do this on this journey with you, because it all stemmed from your noggin, didn't it?
And now what's happened to you? You've had a knock on the head or something? You're being nice to me?
That corona's gone straight to my head, man.
Jesus Christ. We've both got to be there and do it, haven't we, lads? That's the main thing.
That's it, yeah. But like you phoned me and said, do you want to do a podcast? I was like, yeah, whatever. Thinking nothing of it. Next minute, you were rocking up with mics and ideas and like, let's do it. Let's record now. Why not? Why not? Why not? So I can wait round. I can wait round for the perfect moment when, as you said, the perfect moment is now.
Let's do it, yeah. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah, exactly.
But so, yeah, no, thanks everyone for all your support for the first 4 months that we've done it. We'll be releasing interviews over the next 3 or 4 weeks. We'll be back at the beginning of next year when the PGA tour starts.
Yeah.
So everybody have a lovely Christmas.
Stay safe.
Happy New Year, and we will see you in 2021.
Ciao.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh boy, is he out of sync.